Walk into any museum of natural history and you'll find dioramas frozen in time, lions prowling African savannas, polar bears stalking Arctic ice, butterflies perched on native flowers. These exhibits whisper a seductive lie that nature exists in perfect stasis, each creature locked in its rightful place. But step outside and look up during spring or fall, those dark clouds moving across the sky. They're not storm systems. They're millions of migrating birds detected by the same radar technology that once mistook them for invading bombers during World War II. The truth is, nearly half of all tracked species are already on the move, shifting their ranges as the planet warms. And humans? We're not watching this exodus from the sidelines. We're part of it, and always have been. In California's sun-scorched hills, a small butterfly called Edith's checker spot revealed something scientists didn't want to see. Instead of dying out as temperatures rose, these creatures simply moved, northward and upward, following the climate they needed to survive. When researcher Camille Parmesan published her findings in 1996, it wasn't an anomaly, it was a pattern playing out everywhere. Forests in the Himalayas are climbing 19 meters per decade. Red foxes are pushing into Arctic territory. Parasites are appearing in Alaska for the first time. Marine species are relocating even faster than land animals, racing toward the poles at 75 kilometers per decade. Meanwhile, humans are moving too. Tibetan refugees cross mountain passes. Climate disasters displace families from their homes. By 2045, desertification could force 60 million people from sub-Saharan Africa alone, with rising seas potentially adding 180 million more by 2100. Yet despite this mounting evidence, we cling to the idea that migration is abnormal, a crisis, a threat, an invasion. Where did this belief come from? The answer lies not in nature, but in the stories we've told ourselves about it. Carl Linnaeus never intended to build the intellectual scaffolding for xenophobia, but that's exactly what he did. The 18th century Swedish botanist cataloged lakeside plants, convinced God had assigned each creature its perfect place. When European ships returned with tales of strange peoples, Linnaeus created taxonomy, a system of neat categories that split nature into sharp lines. His most consequential split came in Systema Naturae, dividing humanity into subspecies defined by crude stereotypes. Europeans were white, serious, strong, and ruled by laws. Asians, yellow, melancholy, greedy, and ruled by opinion. Africans, black, impassive, lazy, and ruled by caprice. This wasn't just bad science, it was a political act justifying colonialism by casting foreigners as biologically distinct. His framework suggested species belonged in fixed places, that crossing borders violated natural law. Migration wasn't adaptation, it was transgression. Harvard zoologist Louis Agassiz later elevated these categories into scientific truth, commissioning photographs of enslaved Africans to document pure racial types, cementing the idea that mixing was unnatural. By the early 1900s, New York City's transformation threatened the old elite. 6 million African Americans fled Jim Crow, while 27 million immigrants arrived from Europe and Asia. Men like Madison Grant and Henry Fairfield Osborne weaponized science to reclaim power. Grant's 1916 bestseller, The Passing of the Great Race, warned immigration would create a hybrid race of people as worthless and futile as the good-for-nothing mongrels of Central America. The propaganda worked devastatingly. Universities added 376 eugenics courses by 1928. Flawed Ellis Island tests labeled 80% of Jewish, Hungarian, Italian, and Russian immigrants feeble-minded. The 1921 conference at the American Museum of Natural History led to the Johnson-Reed Act, slashing immigration from 800,000 to under 100,000 annually. Hitler called Grant's book "My Bible." When Jewish refugees fled Nazi persecution, America's closed borders turned away 900 asylum seekers. Many perished in the Holocaust. British ecologist Charles Sutherland Elton reinforced these ideas through animal studies, proposing lemmings committed mass suicide during overpopulation, suggesting nature was filled up with no room for newcomers. Gauss's law added scientific weight. two species cannot share the same niche, one must destroy the other. Migration, in Elton's framework, was apocalyptic. His 1958 book, The Ecology of Invasions, warned of migrant species launching surprise attacks with explosive violence. That same year, Disney's White Wilderness showed lemmings leaping off cliffs, complete fraud. Filmmakers captured lemmings, transported them 1,000 miles, filmed them on turntables, then dumped them from trucks over a riverbank. The staged scene won an Academy Award and played in schools for decades, cementing migration as self-destructive madness. Real lemmings were simply seeking better habitat. This crisis narrative extended beyond animals. Birdwatchers celebrated migration, yet condemned invasive plants crossing the same borders. We managed national parks to look as they did to the first European visitors, treating ecosystems as frozen museums. The consensus seemed clear. Borders existed for good reason, and crossing them, whether plant, animal, or person, threatened natural order. But this consensus was built on staged footage and fundamental misunderstanding. For most of history, our origins were guesswork. Darwin suggested we came from Africa, but how did people reach Himalayan peaks, Arctic tundras, and remote Pacific islands? In 1962, anthropologist Carlton Coon claimed human races evolved separately, with Black Africans 200,000 years less evolved. Then genetics changed everything. Scientists discovered mitochondrial DNA passes unchanged from mother to child, creating a molecular clock of human history. The 2000 Human Genome Project demolished racial pseudoscience. Humans showed barely 0.1% genetic variation. Ancient bone DNA revealed something remarkable. Human history isn't a tree with separate branches, it's a braid. Our ancestors left Africa, encountered Neanderthals and Denisovans, and interbred. Modern Europeans and Asians carry about 2% Neanderthal DNA. We've been migrating, meeting, merging, and migrating again for our entire existence. Linnaeus called us Homo sapiens, wise man. A better name might be Homo migratio. GPS technology revealed migration's true scale. Arctic terns fly 70,900 kilometers annually. Jaguars range 10 times farther than thought. Wolves trek 1,000 kilometers across ice. We were simply blind to movement's ubiquity. Predicted catastrophes from invasive species never materialized. Only 1% of introduced species proved disruptive. Migration isn't ecological suicide, it's ecological infrastructure. Over 90% of rainforest trees depend on animal migrants for seed dispersal. Migrants introduce genetic diversity to isolated populations. Habitats connected by migration corridors flourish with twice the biodiversity of isolated patches. Yet we fear human migration, despite evidence showing migrants are typically younger, healthier, and better educated than populations they leave. Xenophobia flourishes not where migrants are numerous, but where they're conspicuous, in homogeneous places experiencing rapid change. Our fear of migration stems from false stories, casting movement as transgression rather than ecological reality. Today's border fortifications rarely stop migration. They just make it deadlier, pushing people into deserts, rougher waters, and higher mountains. Meanwhile, conservation efforts create wildlife corridors across private lands, allowing animals to move safely as climates shift. The irony? The U.S.-Mexico wall serves as a passageway for wildlife. Bighorn sheep, mountain lions, and checkerspot butterflies continue migrating northward, their slight bodies easily lifting over barriers meant to contain movement. We can continue treating migration as a crisis, or reclaim our history as migrants and transform it into a solution. We can create legal pathways, facilitate remittances, reduce detention, and soften borders the way we have between U.S. states or European countries. The climate is changing, and species, including us, will move in response. The only question is whether we'll make that movement safe and humane, or continue sacrificing lives to maintain a fiction. We are not trees. We never have been. The story of life on Earth is a story of movement, and we are its most accomplished travelers.